It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 714. Everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. The name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, and also facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code Mike Tech Show for your free 15-day trial. And don't forget, you can go directly to instanthousecall.com and download your free trial and get started having a great remote access experience to your customers. Got a very diverse show tonight. The first topic is going to be my big Freedom Voice deployment, or at least the biggest since I've become a partner, on Friday. 5 lessons learned, including a lesson today. Win 10 upgrade stories. We've been doing so many. Got to share a couple. Accidentally deleted my iPhone app, the mail app, this week, and I panicked, and I thought I was going to have to redo all of the mail settings. I'm going to share a trick. Microsoft Office, 32-bit versus 64-bit today, as opposed to a few years ago, and Microsoft's stance has changed. I have some great links. I'm going to begin the debate on this show, but I want to continue it into the new year, and I want to get everybody's feedback. So that's got a lot for tonight. But a big reminder, this is the last show until New Year's Eve for the Mike Tech Show. So there'll be no show next week for Christmas, but the next show after tonight, Tuesday, December 31st, 10 p.m., I will begin, I'll record the show, finish that off by 11, and then from 12 midnight till 3 a.m., we'll ring out the new year across the time zones in the U.S. We always have a lot of fun, looking forward to it, and this year, got a couple surprises for New Year's Eve, so hopefully it'll be fun, and should be on the new system, which I'll be getting from Carrie, shipped it already, and it's scheduled to be delivered on Christmas Eve. So that's my Merry Christmas on that new computer. So looking forward to that. So let's begin with the Freedom Voice implementation. One of my clients wasn't a big one, but it was our biggest. It was 8 phones and so many lessons. I just didn't realize. So we're going to begin with the first one. The porting of the 800 number. Now, when you are moving a client and you have to port their local numbers, there's a porting form that you have to fill out, no problem. You do it enough in advance after you get the new client all set up with their account and Freedom Voice assigned them a temporary number. You've already got the invoicing and the billing worked out. Now you begin the transfer process where you fill out the form and maybe even pick a date. And if it's far enough out, if it's a few weeks out, you're going to probably get that date. Now, Freedom Voice tech support told me to not do the porting of the 800 number until a few days before, but that made me very, very nervous. So I did the port, but they didn't submit it and they held it. Now, I'm porting from NetCarrier to Freedom Voice. Well, wouldn't you know it, when it got to a few days before and they submitted it, NetCarrier said they submitted it incorrectly. I went again and again. I've been back and forth. My sales rep, my tech support, for the partner support. I'm back and forth on the 800. I am so worried that that 800 number is not going to port. Guess what happened on last Friday? The 800 number did not port. I knew it, and I was livid. And I didn't understand something, and this is my advice and the lesson learned. Tech support for this particular incident of porting of the 800 number, they are wrong. You want to port that as fast as you can, because once it's ported, you can forward it back to the local number that's still at the other carrier, and now you have it. And then after the local numbers are ported, now you can turn off the forward. Makes sense? It just was too simple for me. I can't believe they never thought of that. When I'm discussing that with the tech, it was like an aha moment for them that they never thought of. I'm like, this is just basic logic. So if you're porting an 800 number, you should port it. The minute you have your Freedom Voice account, go ahead, port that number, because you can always forward the number back to the local number. Now we had to wait. I beat up everybody that I could talk to, and Monday it finally ported. So luckily, if you called the 800 number, it was sort of in a state of limbo in the net carrier ecosystem. And what would happen, you would get the voicemail, that the voice that was there for the old voicemail, and you could leave a message. And that message was delivered via email, but you could never get a human being. Lesson one. Lesson two, faxing. And by the way, these lessons could easily be applied to any VoIP carrier, I believe. But now with faxing, Freedom Voice, I get it. That's not their main thing. They have a nice little interface on their web link portal that you log in to send faxes. Wouldn't you know it, this very client, the first fax that they want to send, it's the CEO, and the file was greater than the file size limit, and he couldn't fax it. I had to get on with tech support. I had it. Now, luckily, at this point, I'm with the white glove partner that's assigned to me, and he was very patient and very helpful, and we were able to work it out. The file sizes, it's a 10 meg limit. So what you have to do when you're scanning the file is lower the resolution on the scanner to reduce the size of the files that you're going to fax. So that was lesson two. Lesson three, the indication light for who is on the phone. When they were with NetCarrier, if there was an extension, someone was using it, there'd be a little red light that was on, so you knew that person was on the phone. Well, they don't have that, Freedom Voice, and they never will. Now, these are the same phones. They're the same model, the Polycom VVX411. They're the same make and model of the phones that they had with NetCarrier. Freedom Voice can't do that, but they offer something else, which is a web, sort of a web portal. You go to web link, and if you go to call stream, there's user status, and there's even a pop out. So you click pop out, and it pops out a very nice listing of all the phones and whether they're being used or not, and all of the user names. Well, there's one little problem. You have to be an admin in order to see that. I did not know that. And this is now Monday, and we have to fix this. So we find out that if you call tech support, call partner support, they have a permission control at the back end. See this, we don't have to make everybody an admin. And they will change the permissions for you to be able to then, the user can log in with his credentials, and he can get the pop out, and they don't have all the other admin access. So if this is a necessary component for your clients, this is something you have to be aware of. All right, something I didn't know. Dialing long distance by default is blocked. on Monday morning, the first phone call that the COO is making is an international phone call. I can't make this up. This client hit all of these things that I have never ran into. So that was an easy fix. That's just a radio button in the admin, but it's something to be aware of. Are your clients going to be calling international? And I don't care who the carrier's with, you're going to have to possibly enable that because by default, it's blocked. This was the biggest problem and it was resolved today, but we didn't know it was a problem until they tried to use it. This morning, their conference phone, they couldn't dial out. You got a dial tone, you dial the number, but it would never connect. You could call in, you could call other extensions on the premises, but you could not dial out. And I was on the phone with partner support, and they were having trouble figuring out. And then the tech realized something. There must be SIP-ALG somewheres on the network, and there is. And this opens up a whole can of worms and a whole nother topic. The bottom line on how he resolved this is at the back end, they have control to invoke encryption for that line outbound. Now, he can do that for every line. They did it for the conference phone line, and now I'm tasked with eliminating the SIP-ALG from the Verizon Business Fios Gateway router. I'm not sure I can. I'm going to talk to Verizon. I know you cannot do that on the residential router, but I think they can turn it off for business routers on their end. So I'm going to have a technical discussion with Verizon probably next week. I'm not going to get it to tomorrow. And then we got Christmas in the middle of the week. So let's see. The second way is to just have it bridged to another router, and that router, we make sure we can disable SIP-ALG. I'm just going to give you a very small taste of what that is here, and then I'm going to have the rest of the info as a PDF in the show notes that you can download and read and investigate further if this is an issue. SIP-ALG modifies VoIP traffic packets and is enabled by default on many routers. When implemented correctly, SIP-ALG modifies specific IP addresses in these packets, changing them from your local IP address to your public IP address. Unfortunately, in many routers, it is poorly implemented, and instead of replacing only the specific IP addresses that need to be replaced, it replaces all of them, which then breaks SIP signaling. Poor implementation of SIP-ALG can cause several issues. Calls dropping, calls not being able to outbound. There's a laundry list. And yes, Verizon does not implement it correctly. So something to be aware of. Now, we've overcome the problem temporarily, but it's lurking and could cause other problems. I was talking to the tech. He forwarded me this great information. I'm going to make it a PDF, share it for you. Hopefully, in the trenches, this can save you time, energy, effort if you run into this. Or you may already have run into this with a Fios Business Gateway router. Share your experience with me. Let me know. So that's it for the lessons learned in Freedom Voice. Now, Saturday, we were at a doctor's office. We had 6 systems to upgrade to Windows 10 because the other 4 were already done. Either they got new systems or if something happened and we had to upgrade or replace it, we did the Windows 10 at the time. This went very well. There were 2 laptops, and this is what took the longest. We had 2 laptops, 4 Dell Optiplexes. The 2 laptops took forever to clone to a solid-state drive. The 4 desktops were very easy. They already had 1 4-gig stick. I had new 4-gig sticks to just add, get them to 8-gig of RAM. They already had solid-state drives. So those 4 systems I had humming. They have Fios. with a gig up and down. So it was a pleasure doing the Windows 10 upgrades. They went way faster than we normally see that. So it was very nice. Everything worked. We had the office admin there on Saturday that he was able to go through when I was done a system and he could check it. Where I gave the hard job to my son, he concentrated on the two laptops. His two laptops took the 3.5 hours that I had for the four systems. And we were done, total 6 systems, 3.5 hours, the two of us. So that went very, very well. And there were not big lessons learned, except you really want fast internet. It's almost worth some of the upgrades we've been doing. If they're laptops, we bring them back to my office here because we have such a fast internet. I can connect it on and we can get those Windows 10 upgrades faster. So here is a lesson from a laptop from a locksmith client. Older client gives me his laptop. Doesn't need it right away. We take our time. When I say take our time, we take like 2 days, right? He didn't need it. He gives us the laptop and I'm the one doing it. Now, my son would not have missed this step. In a rush, I did not check what was his default browser. And after the Windows 10 upgrade, I knew to make Adobe Reader the default to open a PDF, but I missed the browser setting. And Edge, because Microsoft pushes their will to everyone, he boots up and opens up Edge to try to get his mail, and he's a lost puppy dog and has no clue what to do. So my son had to go over there yesterday morning, actually, Wednesday morning, and was able to get him up and running by making Firefox his default browser. But that was on me, and we didn't build a client for that visit because that's a mistake. You know, you make sure, and this is the lesson, when you are doing a Windows 10 upgrade, or doesn't matter, anything involving Windows 10, you have to go into the default apps and go through and know what you should be picking for each one. What's their email client? What office? Make sure Outlook's picked if that's it. Go down for the video, the music. If it's Windows Media Player, reopen Windows Media Player. It was just updated. But very important is that browser. Is it Firefox? Is it Chrome? It's probably not Edge because you're upgrading them, right? From Windows 7, and Edge is not there. So is it Internet Explorer? Now we have to have a discussion. We don't want Internet Explorer as the default browser because there's no more real security updates for that. Everybody's moving away from Internet Explorer. So at that point, we want to take the opportunity to do a little training, import all their settings into Edge, and then work with the client to show them how to use Edge and get them on Edge or move them to Chrome or Firefox. By default, on a new system, we have all of the browsers because I have so many attorney clients that when they are dealing with the different municipalities for filing for court cases and for different work, each county is set almost for a different browser because there's just no similarity across all the different counties. So every law firm that I work with, they have to have all the browsers so they can deal with each of the court systems. On Tuesday, late afternoon, I'm working on my iPhone, and I don't know how this happened, but I accidentally deleted the mail app. And now I am so frustrated because I have to set up all my email accounts. Now I go to accounts and passwords. They're all there. Like, really? I tried to recreate my main work email account and said it's already there. But every time I hit the mail app, it's asking to set up a new email address. I don't want to. They're already there. Here's what happens when you delete the app. Yes, of course, you go to the app store, you download the app, but now you got to go to the settings. When you delete the mail app, I did not know this, and this is another link for tonight, which is Mail app missing from iPhone? Here's the real fix. You go in and you turn on the mail button for each of the accounts. When I'm done, lo and behold, all my email's there. It's working beautiful. And I have full access. So just a great tip, if you delete the mail app, how to get all that working with no stress, no muss. And I was really glad because I really didn't feel like setting all those accounts up again on the phone. I could spend weeks, multiple shows on this next topic and the last topic for the show tonight. It's Office 32-bit versus 64-bit. So choosing between them, if this was years ago when Office 2010 was introduced, that's when Microsoft introduced the 64-bit version of Office. But with this caveat, they said, don't install it unless you absolutely have to, because I think there was something about Excel that only like certain engineers and people doing certain things to so many decimal places that needed the 64-bit version. Because all of the different software and hardware companies that have add-ins, they were not making 64-bit add-ins. So lots of people who ran out and installed the 64-bit version, a lot of the add-ins didn't work. Even in the beginning, Adobe and all, there were so many different, the card scan add-ins, and there were so many different add-ins that even Microsoft said, install the 32-bit version. And they kept that for years. You know, today, Microsoft has did a complete reversal on this. They now, not only when you're ready to download, they recommend downloading the 64-bit version of Office 365 or the full retail version of Office 2019. They push and recommend 64-bit because it's been so many years that most add-ins are available at 64-bit. So this came up because I'm going to be receiving my new system next week. So what version of Office do I put on it? Now, I'm currently using Office 2010 32-bit, and I'm very happy because I really don't like 2013. I don't like the 2016 / Office 365. I'm just not a fan, but all my clients are on that platform. Now, I own Office 365 for multiple computers, a lot of my laptops, my test system, so I do work with it. But my main system that's going to be replaced, I wasn't sure which version I should download. It's definitely going to be Office 365, but do I do 64-bit? So here's the question you must ask your client or yourself. Are you going to be running Microsoft Project or Visio? Now, they're considered Office products. You cannot mix versions. And I tried it, by the way. If you have Office 365 64-bit, you cannot try to install the 32-bit of Visio. So you got to look at every add-in that you have for Outlook. Is there an equivalent 64-bit? Now, right now, the only major add-in I have is Evernote. And Evernote is working beautifully on my Outlook 64-bit Outlook 365. Whew, mouthful. Anyway, all that said, you got to do the due diligence looking up all those add-ins and then look at your companion Office apps. If any of them are 32-bit and you can't reinstall or can't do something to get it to 64-bit, game over, you're stuck in the 32-bit world, and that's fine. Your decision is made for you. But if you're like me right now, being presented with the choice, do I stick a fork in the ground and say, okay, I'm going 64-bit, which I think I'm going to do, and stay the course and keep everything 64-bit until I end up with an absolute required Office app or add-in that is only available in 32-bit. Now I got to uninstall everything, reinstall it as 32-bit, and then do the add-in. I'm prepared to do that. I've made the decision because since I'm Office 365, it is very easy. Just takes a couple minutes to uninstall. All your settings are saved, all your recent history, everything's there. And then just install the new app because I can go right online and say, hey, at my account in Microsoft Office, just pick the 32-bit or the 64-bit, whatever is necessary, install it. I have fast internet connection. It's going to be a blazing fast system, and I can go back. That's my logic. Challenge me before my new system comes in. Convince me. If I'm wrong, let me know, because I'll install the 32-bit version. I need your experience. What are you seeing? What are you doing for yourself? What are you doing for your clients? I never thought I'd be having that issue again until I read that Microsoft actually recommends the 64-bit version. And I'm like, I know I quoted you a few years ago stating the exact opposite. I know. I did it on this show a few times. So what are you doing? Hit me up and we'll continue the discussion. I have three really good links to get you to think. The first one is from Microsoft. Choose between the 64-bit or the 32-bit version of Office. Then there's another one from msoutlook.info. Should I install the 32-bit or 64-bit version of Office and Outlook? And they give you the benefits of using 64-bit. When should I consider the 32-bit? And then when all that's done, it asks you again. And it also shows you how to check all the different versions of the different flavors of Office. Hey, which version are you using? And this way you know, because you may not be sure. This page will tell you how. And then the third one is solved. Why is 64-bit MS Office now recommended? And this is a nice little article that I uncovered. So with these three, take a look at them. Give me your feedback. What would you think? And we take it from there. So now Tony in the chat, why would you need the 64-bit version? Well, it's going to run faster. You can load bigger files within the different version with 64-bit. So there are a couple advantages. And why hold it back if I'm going to have this incredibly blazing fast system of and something that's obvious? If you have a 32-bit operating system, of course you have no choice. You have to install the 32-bit version. And then you're limited on how much RAM you can have, because 32-bit can only read certain amount of RAM. So hopefully you will be able to take advantage of the 64-bit. Now me, I'm going to have a Core i9. I'm going to have 64 gigs of RAM, and it's a beast. And having such a fast system, I want the fastest applications that I can feed it. So, all right. This is from Atmos 98 in the chat. Hi, Mike. Personally, for me, I normally update my Office program whenever Microsoft releases a new version comes out via 64-bit. And I'm currently on Office 2019, and it simply does the job. Atmos, I agree. Behind me on my test system, I have Office 2019 64-bit, and I like it. I actually like, there's little nuances in Outlook 2019 that I actually like over 2016. Now, to the naked eye, everything looks the same, but I actually am fond of Office 2019, and I know I quoted Winston Wolf and some other people who, when 2019 came out, they were not happy with some of the things. I'm still confused of the branding. And this is for another story. I have Office 2019 as an activated license, but when Word opens up, it still says Office 365 when it's loading, but it's licensed Office 2019. I have not figured that out. This is Final Form, Luigi. Microsoft Office 2003 is the best version of Office ever. Prove me wrong. Actually, and I hated Office 2007, but the Office 2010 is closer to 2003 than any of the other versions. I think the most stable, best Office for me was Office 2010. Here's the problem. There's no more security updates for Office 2007 or Office 2003, so you're putting your system at risk. There are lots of different infections and security risks by not getting any more security updates for the older versions of Office. Office 2010 will be end of life in October 2020. So we have another year left of Office 2010. I have such a huge portion of my clients are Office 2010. The year 2020 coming up is going to be the year of migrating to Office 365 for everybody. I know it. So as we're migrating everybody to Windows 10, we're going to be migrating everybody. Final Form, there are lots of people in your camp. Office 2003 was a fine, great version of Office. And I have clients that I'm still running into that are using it. But as we go to Windows 10, I'm like, forget it. So I've migrated a couple clients right from Office 2003 to Office 365. So you could imagine the shock and awe when they started looking at Office 365. Life was never the same again. It's almost Christmas and you have those final things you want to buy. Maybe it's a gift card for your stocking for the person you love, the person you need a gift. You are shopping frantically at Amazon. Before you go to Amazon, go to our website, miketechshow.com, mikenation.net. Click on the Amazon link. Carrie Holzman and I share that link. Your price stays the same. It brings you back to Amazon, but anything you buy, a small commission comes back to help support the Mike Tech Show and Tech Vets. Carrie Holzman and myself, we appreciate it. You have been really blowing it up and using it this month. Keep it going. It's still only the 19th of the month, and just keep using the link. We thank you so much. We really appreciate it for using our Amazon link. It really makes a difference. Also, Fabs Auto Backup 7 Pro, the best software you can use for moving your settings from one system to another. Of course, we thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor. Go to instanthousecall.com, download the free trial. You have it for 15 days to beat it up and kick the tires, and then go back and subscribe. You will love it. I have some final music I just thought of. Every Christmas, I play this song on the last show before Christmas. Give a listen, and then we'll begin to wrap up again. That was A Christmas Canon by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I play that every year. That is my favorite Christmas tune. I hope you enjoyed it. Everybody who's celebrating Christmas, have a happy and safe Christmas. I wish you and your family a Merry Christmas. I will hopefully see you back here New Year's Eve at 10 p.m. for the next show as we ring in 2020. That's it. Thank you for staying subscribed and following me and supporting the show. And I'll see you New Year's Eve. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.